Thank you. Be seated. Court is ready to hear oral argument from petitioner in Proctor versus Andrews.
May it please the court. Respect these for the one argument for petitioners. Petitioners have received reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal.
May it please the court. My name is Craig Deeds. I will present argument on behalf of the petitioners. This case involves the constitutionality of Texas Local Government Code Section 143.057, which allows covered employees to appeal terminations to independent hearing examiners rather than to civil service commissions whose members are appointed by the city. The Amarillo Court of Appeals ruled the statute unconstitutional, rejecting the Tyler Court of Appeals reasoning in Blair v. Rapids, a case decided only 1 year earlier. The Amarillo Court found the statute's use of the single word qualified to describe arbitrators set so vague a standard as to delegate to the AAA or FMCS the legislative task of determining hearing examiner qualifications. The Court of Appeals decision itself raises two issues. First, whether the court correctly ruled that the statute's use of the word qualified renders the statute unconstitutionally vague. And second, whether the court correctly ruled that the city, as a governmental entity, had standing to raise its vagueness challenge to the statute. On this appeal, the respondent has raised a third issue not addressed by the Court of Appeals. That issue is whether the statute cedes the city's power to discipline police officers to hearing examiners in violation of the home rule provision of the Texas Constitution. In argument today, I will focus on the vagueness and home rule issues, touching briefly on the standing issue as time permits.
Are you equating the so-called vagueness issue with an unconstitutional delegation issue?
Your Honor, it is couched as a legislative delegation challenge. However, as I think this court noted in Texas Bollweevil versus Llewellyn, some legislative delegation challenges are in fact substantive due process claims. We contend that the city's vagueness challenge in this case is in fact a due process claim that the city lacks standing to present.
Is it correct that there's no appeal from the hearing examiner's determination?
Your Honor, Section 057 provides a limited appeal if the hearing examiner exceeds his jurisdiction or if the arbitration award is procured by fraud or unlawful.
But there's no substantial evidence review.
There is not a substantial evidence review as there is in the case of civil service commissions. However, I would point out with regards to civil service commission cases, the city lacks any authority to appeal whatsoever. Only a police officer or firefighter can appeal a civil service commission decision. Looking at the respondent's vagueness challenge, it's their position adopted by the Court of Appeals that the statute delegates the task of determining hearing examiner qualifications to the AAA by using an inherently vague term, qualified. It's important to understand the way the statute operates to see the city's attack in perspective. The statute allows a disciplined employee to appeal to a hearing examiner instead of the Civil Service Commission. When the employee and city cannot agree on a hearing examiner, the AAA must provide a list of 7 qualified neutral arbitrators for consideration. The city and the employee then use that list to select a hearing examiner for the case.
How does the AAA determine who is qualified to hear one of these matters?
Your Honor, the AAA is assigned the task of providing a hearing examiner.
A qualified hearing examiner.
That's
correct?
Your Honor, what they're required to provide are lists of qualified neutral arbitrators. Arbitrator, each of those terms is a term that is a general, commonly understood term that's not vague in the context of the statute. What the AAA is asked to provide are lists of capable, impartial hearing examiners. Now, the city has pointed out, well, the statute doesn't prescribe any more qualifications for hearing examiners than that. They point to the Civil Service Commission as an example of where standards have been set.
So how does the AAA decide who is qualified to be on this list of 7 that's presented to the parties?
Your Honor, the AAA has standards that it utilizes to determine whether people can, in fact, be arbitrators. Each of the arbitrators on a AAA list, in fact, has training and experience specifically in the area of hearing these types of appeals. Civil service commissions, on the other hand, commissioners are required only to be a certain age.
I'm just taking you back to just the focus of qualified with respect to the hearing examiner list that's provided by the AAA. And it's the AAA's qualification list for what it takes to be an arbitrator with the AAA that is the standard.
That's correct, Your Honor. Every person that's on a list that's provided by the AAA is going to be a person who has met its qualification standards.
Is that what qualified means in the statute then?
Your Honor, I think what qualified means in the statute is simply that it's a capable person. To look at the term qualified neutral arbitrator in the context of the statute, you have to ask the question, what's this person being assigned to do? The statute assigns that person the task of hearing a disciplinary appeal. A person who is a qualified neutral arbitrator on a AAA list is a person that is in fact qualified, and in fact the city has never offered any evidence in this case or any other that I'm aware of where persons actually offered as hearing examiners were in fact not qualified.
Some of the amici say in their briefs that in fact is the case. That, for example, we have people who are not lawyers making legal determinations, interpreting federal statutes, and that type of thing. And so they argue that, in fact, these people are not qualified, even in the general sense, given what a hearing officer examiner must do. What is your response to that argument?
Your Honor, that's the exact same attack that could be made on civil service commissioners. To be a commissioner, you're only required to be age 25, a non-public office holder, of good moral character, and whatever that means, the city manager who picks, or the city executive who picks the side. So those persons aren't necessarily lawyers.
Well, they are. No, I understand, but we're not worrying about that piece of the statute right now. That's what I'm trying to focus on. What the argument, as I understand it to be, is whether or not the use of the word qualified is vague.
Your Honor, while the use of the word qualified would not require a person on a AAA list, for example, to be an arbitrator, it would require that person to have some training and experience in this area, which in fact is more than what is required of civil service commissioners. So I think that the point made by the amicus briefs is incorrect when they say that in fact untrained people are being assigned the task of hearing these cases. In each case, of course, a list of seven names is provided. The city and the employee then alternately strike. And so certainly the city has some ability to control who ultimately is selected as a hearing examiner in that case.
But that's not their argument. What is the source of the standards for the civil service commission that you just quoted?
The statute, Your Honor.
Their argument is that in that case, the legislature is the one who sets the standards, and whoever gets the selection purpose follows that standard. And yet, the other part of the argument is here, qualified is not by legislative definition, but it's decided by a profit organization, vis-a-vis the AAA. And therein lies the difference between who does what and under what basis.
Well, Your Honor, it's an attack. That's an attack on the use of the word qualified. And you have to read the whole phrase, qualified neutral arbitrators. It's an attack on the use of qualified as a standard of measurement or standard of measurement of the delegation. This court routinely has upheld the use of such general words as standards of delegation. If I can point to one example, this court's decision in Jordan versus State Board of Insurance, a unanimous decision of this court in 1960. In that case, the statute required the board to rescind certificates for insurance carriers whose officers were not worthy of the public confidence. The carrier, just like the city here, claimed that the statute was vague because it set no standards for the insurance board to use to determine whether or not insurance company officers were not worthy of public confidence. The carrier argued, just like the city here, the statute allowed the insurance board to arbitrarily set officer qualifications that they would use to judge. This court unanimously rejected that idea. This court held that the idea embodied within that phrase, worthy of public confidence, was reasonably clear and hence acceptable as a standard of measurement. In so ruling, the court noted abundant case law upholding the statutory use of similarly general, reasonably understood terms as standards of measurement.
But is there a difference in that in the Jordan case, it's the insurance board, which is a state agency that applies the legislative standard, whatever it is. And in the case of the civil service commissioner, it's a city person, part of the government that applies the standard that the legislature set. But in this case, their argument is qualified is not applied by any government agency. It's applied by a non-government agency that's a profit organization. Therefore, it suffers from the problem that we had in Bowie.
Well, Your Honor, there's no doubt that the statute utilizes the experience of the American Arbitration Association in coming up with persons who are qualified, which is the statutory standard, and they are relying on AAA in that regard. That's no different than a host of statutes that similarly use the expertise of private organizations. The workers' compensation statute uses the AMA's expertise in coming up with guidelines for what constitutes an impairment.
No, it uses a specific publication.
That's correct, Your Honor.
They've changed that since, and that does not change the standards. One of the complaints.
Your Honor, to give another example, this court, in deciding who will be bar applicants that can be appropriate, allows them to attend accredited schools. Schools accredited by whom? By the American Bar Association. That's utilizing a private standard to make a decision about whether or not a person has had the required schooling to become a lawyer to practice before this and other courts in Texas.
But the additional concern here is that there are more people who are qualified than the seven on the list, whatever qualified.
Is that there are more people that? Certainly, Your Honor, there are more people.
So how did the seven get on the list?
The seven get on the list chosen at random from among the qualified arbitrators that are in the pools that the AAA keeps.
Well, they are required to choose them at random, or they do choose them at random?
I believe that they do choose them at random, Your Honor.
But they're not required to. There's somebody who's in charge of it wants to put these six people, seven people, five, two, one on this list. They could do it.
Well, Your Honor, if there were manipulation of the list, that would certainly raise the question of fraud. And, of course, fraud is one basis for appeal of a hearing examiner's award. So certainly that kind of evidence or information would be relevant to an appeal of a hearing examiner's award.
But the statute does not prescribe how you get on the list. It could be the people that have been most successful, or the people that have been the best comments about, or the people who have had the most business or the least business. It doesn't have to be random.
Your Honor, no. There's no requirement that it be random, but I think that the situation that you were posing is a situation where there's actual manipulation of the list, and certainly that, I think, would be challengeable.
But short of manipulation, this private group could decide how we're going to pick the qualified. Once you get overqualified, now there's 1,000 people who are qualified, we're going to decide the mechanism by which these seven get picked. They could do that. Statute doesn't prohibit it.
The statute doesn't specifically prohibit that, Your Honor, and I would point out that the word qualified that the court is focusing on with regards to this statute appears in a host of other arbitration statutes that are utilized in Texas. This court has said previously that arbitration of disputes is highly favored in Texas.
But those are statutes where the employees opt into the arbitration process, are they not? It's an optional procedure.
Your Honor, I don't think that provides a basis for distinction. The question is whether by allowing the court or a private entity to determine qualifications for arbitrators, whether that's an impermissible delegation of legislative authority. If it is in the non-voluntary sense, it doesn't make any sense that it wouldn't be in the voluntary sense. Now, so you have a situation where when the parties in an arbitration under the Texas General Arbitration Act cannot agree on who will be an arbitrator, the court is assigned the function of looking at the dispute and picking one or more qualified arbitrators. And that's the phrase used in the statute.
Let me ask a question. I'm having a hard time understanding this. The city is not arguing that the legislature could set up a mechanism where the aggrieved employee could seek an arbitrator from outside the city. They're not arguing that there is something unconstitutional about a statute that authorizes the American Arbitration Association to be the arbitrator, some member of that to be the arbitrator. And, am I correct? They're not arguing you can't permit the American Arbitration Association to be the arbitrator. They're just arguing you can't let them exercise some sort of qualification.
Your Honor, in this case, they're arguing simply that there aren't sufficient standards to guide the AAA in providing lists of arbitrators. They are not arguing in this case that it would in all circumstances be impermissible to obtain an arbitrator to hear a disciplinary case from the AAA.
Well, is there a complaint that the American Arbitration Association is the one that's being used, or is there a complaint that the legislature cannot authorize anybody outside of the civil service, I guess, to be the arbitrator? Are they saying if you can authorize somebody outside, it's got to be, you've got to say, delegate the public?
Your Honor, I think
my problem is the real problem here because they use the word qualified, or is the real problem here that there are no standards for the qualification?
Your Honor, the real problem I think cited by the city is that they use qualified, and the city understands that to be establishing qualifications. Now, in answer to your question, though, I would point out that the city also contends that its power to discipline officers and presumably to hear disciplinary appeals is a home rule power that can't be ceded at all.
Okay,
and that's their third argument.
Well, I'm not talking, I'm going
yes,
strictly to the first argument. Is the city's complaint that there is no standard for a outside party to be the arbitrator, or is their complaint that qualified means that there is no, that the standards, whatever they are,
Your Honor,
if this statute had not used the word qualified, would the city be complaining about this statute?
Yes, sir. As I understand their complaint is the word qualified is too vague a standard to guide the AAA in providing people that are capable of hearing these disciplinary appeals. And
they
that
don't
is the
complain,
gist of their complaint.
They're
saying that using the word
AAA membership being the pool that's being used.
No, there hasn't been a complaint in this case. They're simply saying that use of the word qualified sets too vague a standard for guidance of the AAA in providing lists of people that are capable of hearing firefighter and police officer disciplinary appeals.
I've got two quick questions. One,
yes,
federal arbitration mediation service a federal entity?
Yes, the Federal Mediation and Conciliation Service is an entity of the federal government. Lists can be requested from either the AAA or the FMCS.
And that's at the city's option?
That's at the city's option.
Do you see any distinction between delegation of this type of state governmental authority to another governmental entity as opposed, albeit federal, as opposed to a private group?
Well, Your Honor, I think this court has recognized in Llewellyn that there is a distinction between a delegation to a governmental agency on the one hand and to a private entity on the other, and this court has indicated that it would look more closely at private delegations and utilize the eight-factor test that was announced in Llewellyn. So there is a distinction based on the Llewellyn decision. However, in this case, there doesn't have to be a delegation to a private entity at all unless the city chooses to get the list from the AAA as opposed to the FMCS.
And would you speak just briefly, you didn't have a chance to their home rule argument?
Yes, Your Honor. Their home rule argument is that the statute cedes what is, in effect, a police or governmental power to a third party in violation of their rights as a home rule city.
Right.
I think that this court's decision in City of Sweetwater v. Guerin completely forecloses that argument. City of Sweetwater v. Guerin says that the home rule powers of a city may be modified or restricted by higher state law in the form of state statutes. The Civil Service Act, of which Section 057 is a part, is one such statute. And in City of Sweetwater v. Guerin, this court specifically held in 1964 that the legislature has preempted the field of firefighter and police officer discipline for firefighters and police officers covered by the Civil Service Act. For that reason, there is no improper abrogation of their home rule authority, and I don't believe that that point can stand.
Any other questions?
I have one question I'm just curious. Give you another hypothetical case, not this case, but assuming the city had agreed to comply with the statute and you got seven lanes, would each side get unlimited strikes?
No, Your Honor, the sides alternately strike, so each side would get three strikes until one name remains on the list. That name which survives the strike process would be the person who has chosen the hearing examiner.
So in essence, bottom line is three sites apiece, and whoever remains is the arbiter.
That's correct, Your Honor. That's how the system works.
But the parties do have the opportunity first to agree, on their own arbitrator apart from ever going to one of these circuits.
Correct. In fact, you don't go to either the FMCS or the AAA unless the parties first have been unable to agree on a hearing examiner to resolve the dispute.
Any other questions? Thank you. Court is ready to hear argument from Ms. Cummings.
May it please the Court, Mr. Wade White and Mr. Cecil Cooley, that argument for the respondent. Mr. Wade will open the first 10 minutes.
May it please this honorable court, first of all, I would like to put one issue to bed. The Federal Mediation and Conciliation Service is a government entity, but the arbitrators are not government employees. It is nothing more than a clearinghouse for arbitrators, and so it should not be given the same benefit under the law when you're talking about delegation to a private entity as opposed to a governmental agency.
And that brings up a very, very interesting point. Throughout your brief, it seemed to me the delegation you were talking about was more than the delegation to choose the arbitrator. It was the delegation to the arbitrator himself to make this decision in lieu of the Civil Service Commission, whereas almost all the petitioner's briefs seem to be talking about the delegation under the statute to make a choice of the arbitrator.
Is that
disconnect there, as I saw it?
I guess it depends on where you're pitching or catching, but you've really got more than one delegation here. You've got a delegation to the AAA or the Federal Mediation and Conciliation Service to come up with a list. Then you have an additional delegation to the individual that is ultimately selected to hear this dispute. So I don't know if that answers the Chief Justice's question, but there's more than one delegation here.
You're complaining about both delegations.
Yes, sir.
And you complained about both in the trial court.
In fact, and I think in the footnote of Justice Dodson's opinion, I think in the Amarillo Court, he talks about another delegation of the right to appeal. And interestingly enough, I want to talk about that just a minute. And despite what learned counsel for the petitioner said, I think there's a real dispute about whether or not the city has any right of appeal from an arbitrator's decision under the AAA and the hearing examiner scheme. And whereas I thought it real interesting in the East Texas case, if they're saying is in conflict, the East Texas case talked about qualifications and then dropped it from that point. And then in the last paragraph, they say, well, we agree that these hearing examiners should apply the Texas case law and the civil service law, but they don't talk anything at all about the qualifications that that individual should possess. And so I take some heart from that part of the opinion that they're saying that there are some qualifications that this hearing examiner should have. Now, the Act just doesn't speak to them, and we think it's an incomplete delegation of legislative authority to a private entity.
Let me make sure I understand where the prohibition on the delegation comes from. You cite Article 11, Section 5 of the Texas Constitution. Mm-hmm. Is there any other source in the Texas Constitution that prohibits delegation to a private person?
Article 2 and 3, the legislative function, we think they have delegated the legislative function in this case.
I may have missed that in your brief.
I think we touched on that in our brief.
The delegation from the AAA to the hearing examiner is not a legislative delegation.
No.
It's some other type of delegation.
It's a delegation that the legislature said you're going to get your arbitrator, your hearing examiner, from a list from the AAA, and that individual ultimately has the delegation. Well, I guess he doesn't have the delegation as far as his authority. I mean, his qualifications.
But that's not
concerned.
The legislature doesn't.
But
he
does have. Right. Exactly. You're right.
Let me ask you this. Well, this is along the line of what I'm curious about. It seems to me your argument, the delegation issue was decided a long time ago when the legislature and the court decided that there could be administrative hearings with administrative officers deciding these cases. But it seemed to me the argument was the delegation of judicial authority, not delegation of legislative authority. I'm a little bit confused here. The issue is not, it seems to me, whether or not it's an impermissible delegation of legislative authority to have a judge from the AAA deciding this case. It seems to me whether or not this is a judicial delegation or something. I mean, there's a difference between legislative delegation, that is the authority to regulate and make rules, and the issue of hearing officer to resolve a dispute. Seems to me the city's arguing that the city's argument is not correct here. The issue about this hearing officer is not a legislative delegation, because this officer is not going to be setting up city ordinances or regulating the conduct of the city. This officer is simply going to be deciding a dispute between the officer and the city, and it seems to me that issue was long ago resolved when you had administrative hearing officers and that sort of thing set up.
Well,
why is that the issue here?
If I might back up, this issue is so important to the city because, in effect, what is involved is the police power of a home rule city. Now, the issue was brought up, well, is it preemptible by the legislature? Well, no, it isn't, because the legislature set this up originally requiring the cities to vote whether or not they wanted a civil service system for their police and fire departments. So it's not preempted by the legislature. It's still a voluntary thing, and in fact, not all the cities have a civil service system. Not all of them have adopted it. And when it was originally adopted, it did not have this 143.057. It only had the Civil Service Commission system in place. So I guess we could certainly argue that there might be a real problem right now whether or not, after the legislature added this some 36 years later, whether or not any city in its right mind would adopt it. Because in effect, what it does, it transfers the discipline of as one justice had referred to it, a very paramilitary police force to an outside body, to where you're going to have different arbitrators each time you set up facts.
It's not a discipline, it's a decision maker. It's a resolving dispute, isn't it? I mean,
you're
not talking about discipline, you're talking about a judge.
It is a discipline matter. In this, and I disagree also with counsel when he says this only applies to terminations. None of the officers that are petitioners in this case were terminated. They were disciplined with suspensions for various things, such as mistreating an officer who was handcuffed and being restrained by two other officers. We have another officer responding to a call, and there's a dispute. Somebody's in the house and somebody's outside, and in violation of procedure, he helps the guy outside get back inside. We had another officer who was under the influence of alcohol while he was supposed to be in an undercover support situation, supporting another officer who was doing a narcotics job, and these were all in violation of the policies of the police department. So it's not.
What are the qualifications of the Civil Service Commission?
They're set out in 143.006. And they have to be over 25 years of age, not held a public office within the last three or some odd period of time. And there's some other qualifications set in there. Now, we're not here to argue that we want to set the qualifications. That is obviously a function of the legislative process, whatever the legislature comes up with.
Mr. White, to follow up on your the facts on the three individuals involved here, they were just the chief of police or some city official set a certain punishment for their acts, and the officers were appealing or opted to appeal. They thought that perhaps it was too harsh.
Yes, sir.
They had an option to have the city and themselves agree on an arbitrator, and that did not work. So they opted to go to this, utilize the benefits under this statute, and have an arbitrator, neutral, qualified arbitrator, to determine whether the chief's punishment was too severe or not.
Well,
and that neutral arbitrator had the power to reduce the sentence that the chief of police had given. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Could the arbitrator increase the sentence?
No, I don't think he can. And it's only the officer is the only one that has that option. You actually have three options. Number one, you can go to civil service, which as a practical matter is not done. Number two, you can agree on a hearing examiner. Number three, you can demand that the director of the civil service request a list from either the AAA or the FMCS, and then that individual hears it, from which I contend is our position. We have no appeal from that.
All
I'm trying to understand two arguments here. One, you're talking about there's an improper delegation. The delegation of the Civil Service Commission is fine, because they have to be 25 years old and a Texas resident, but it's too loose for who the AAA chooses. If the statute were amended to have that the AAA could choose anybody they want to, except they had to be residents of Texas and 25 years old and not a public official and not currently in prison or whatever those five requirements are, would you then have a delegation complaint? And I hadn't thought you would until a minute ago when you started talking about discipline of a paramilitary force.
Well, we may or may not, depending upon what comes out of the legislature and the give and take that goes into the two.
No give and take
problem.
To it at all. If the AAA and FMCS were limited to, it had to be someone who also met the, somebody within their pool who also, seven people who met the qualifications of the civil service commissioners, would you then have a delegation?
Well, we might have. I'm not going to say that we wouldn't, but the city's option then is to look at the new system and see if it works, and then they could vote to repeal it.
Well, which you could vote to repeal this, correct? Although the,
electorate
already chose this system, is that
yes,
right?
Sir. And we're not wanting to throw away civil service.
The electorate. Does your local city government have the authority to repeal this, or does
yes,
it
sir.
Come from the electorate?
It's no, the electorate has to repeal it, and it, that's set out in the statute. But we don't want to throw away civil service.
Well, clear something for me. When you say has the power to repeal it, does it have the power to repeal this particular section 143057, or just opt out of the whole?
Just opt out.
Any other questions before we go, Mr. Coon?
I understand, but if you opted out of civil service, what would you be left with?
Well,
what would be the rights of the officers, firemen and police officers' rights?
It's interesting that you brought that up, because there's another case coming up that might be an issue in that case. Petition is pending before this court at that time, because, quite frankly, in our position in that case is we went back and looked and found out that the city of Lubbock, and it will be our position, did not adopt an identical verbatim civil service system set out exactly like 1269M was. And so it will be our position in that case that we have to, that when this 143057 or its predecessor came in, that the electorate of the city of Lubbock would have to pass on that. There are other cities in the state that have civil service systems that aren't like this. But that's not required.
I'm not sure that answers the question. If you did repeal what you've got, regardless of what it is, if you repeal the civil service system that you've got, how would officers be disciplined, and would there be an appeal process?
Well, we might establish the same civil service system, a system that wasn't identical to. I can't answer that because I don't know, quite frankly.
Any other questions? Your opposing counsel says this is really a void for vagueness argument, couched in terms of separation of powers, and the municipality has no power to bring a due process claim under established Texas law. Would you comment on that?
Yes, I would, John. I'd like to comment on that. There are several points on that. In the first place, it's clear that it's not a void for vagueness argument, which was our point one in the Court of Appeals. We had four constitutional points. Point one was vague and indefinite. Point two was unconstitutional delegation of legislative authority under Article 2, Section 1, Article 3, Section 1. Our third point was it's inherently creates an inherent bias, the way that this thing's set up against the city. And fourthly, it violates the delegation of home rule city authority under Article 11, Section 5. The Amarillo Court rejected our points 1 and 3 on the ground of standing, that the city was not a person, and these were due Bill of Rights complaints, which the city couldn't raise. The Court of Appeals rejected that, and they specifically decided on our point two, which was unconstitutional delegation of legislative authority. They do use the word vague in there, but what
But clearly, if you read the opinion, clearly what they're talking about is not, the word qualified has a meaning. The word qualified is not vague. The word qualified means one that complies with the standards.
Are you waiving in this court or not? You're not pressing your points 1 and 3 below. You're abandoning those.
No, we have raised them as alternative. Although the court did not sustain them, we have raised them as alternative grounds. And in the Wilson case, we have raised them in our motion for rehearing. In that case, we'll bring them up.
So it is your argument that you can make a void for vagueness argument separate from your delegation argument?
Correct. And also, it's important to point out that the city is not the only party here. We've got officials of the city and the court in Nootsey. The Durish case was by the Amarillo Court for the distinction between Bill of Rights and other types of challenges. We think under Nootsey, even the city itself has a right to bring these challenges. And it's important to note too that we're talking here about we've got two different types of delegation. One of them are the complaint that we have that the Amarillo Court ruled on that it's an unconstitutional delegation of legislative authority under Article 2, Section 1. That can be cured by an appropriate legislative by going back in and setting forth the standards, just like they have for petty juries. This court set forth standards that they must be a certain age, must not be convicted of crime, must be a citizen of the United States, whatever. That can be cleared up by a legislative amendment. But the Article 11, Section 5, which the Amarillo Court did not reach in the Proctor case, but they did reach in the Wilson case, which we've attached as an appendix to our brief, which came up subsequently, involves the same constitutional issues and other issues as well. In the Wilson case, they said it was also an unconstitutional delegation of home rule power, and that's a constitutional matter, whether or not the legislature can permit the citizens to vote or direct an arbitration on a police power to someone that arbitrator that could live anywhere in the United States. And that could not be cured, we submit, by a mere statutory amendment.
Let me make sure I understand that. If the legislature came back and made the arbitration board, the FAA or the AAA, whatever, they had the same requirement that your Civil Service Commission has, but it's still a private arbitrator or private mediator, would you still have an unconstitutional delegation problem?
Under Article 2, Section 1?
Anywhere.
If the legislature allowed the AAA to give a list of arbitrators, but set forth in the statute that you shall not put anybody on this list that does not have a law degree, is not 35 years of age, or so forth, if that met the appropriate standards, then you would not have an unconstitutional delegation under Article Legislative Authority under Article 2, Section 1, or Article 3, Section 1. But we feel that you would still have an unconstitutional delegation under Article 11, Section 5, because you are still giving to some ultimately you're giving to some private individual who has no accountability to the city whatsoever, aside from the divergent opinions that you're going to get in the same fact situation. If you have one arbitrator from New York ruling in one case, one from California ruling in another case, but aside from that, we submit that the discipline of the police force is a city function which cannot be delegated to some private individual.
however the legislature tries to do it.
Any other questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the court, I think it's important to refocus on what exactly are the nature of the two challenges by the city.
Let me ask you to respond to what he just said, what Mr. Kuhn just said. Why isn't that a problem when you delegate the police power to discipline policemen to a private entity? Why isn't that a problem under our Constitution?
Well, Your Honor, their argument is under the Home Rule provision. Of course, under the Home Rule provision, you can't cede governmental powers to anybody absent constitutional authorization. I think that this court foreclosed that argument in Sweetwater v. Guerin, because Sweetwater v. Guerin, of course, home rule authority, to the extent it exists, it derives from the Constitution, but it can be limited by state statutes. The state has done so by state statute. They've assigned this adjudicatory function to hearing examiners. This court in City of Sweetwater v. Guerin said the state has preempted the field of firefighter and police officer discipline. So clearly, the state, the home rule authority that they're claiming.
Well, how can the state delegate its police power to private entities?
Your Honor, they don't cite any authority, and the Court of Appeals in Wilson did not cite any authority for the idea that this adjudicatory function, simply hearing a disciplinary appeal, is a police power. If the court were to accept that argument, then could the state regulate the city's control of its police force in any manner? Could they require that they have a civil service system? Could they require that the police officers be certified by the police organization?
No. My point is, how is it that the state has the authority to delegate discipline of firefighters and police officers to the private sector? Where do they get that authority, as opposed to the governmental sector, where there's some sort of check and balance and accountability to a government official?
Your Honor, the answer is that they have not delegated the power to discipline police officers to a private entity. The police chief still makes that decision,
which can be totally overridden by a private individual.
The private individual can say that decision is either not supported by the facts or is inappropriate in the context of the case. That's true.
That private individual has the final say so.
Except for the limited appeal that the statute provides.
So how does the state have the authority to delegate that police power, that function of disciplining police officers, to a private individual?
Your Honor, what I would say is that the power to hear a disciplinary appeal is not, in fact, a police power. That the power to make decisions about discipline is, in fact, remains with the city, and that hearing adjudicatory appeals is a totally separate matter that clearly is within the province of the state. Otherwise, the state couldn't set up administrative agencies at all to look at things that cities or other governmental entities do.
The Civil Service Commission members are private citizens, are they not? They're not employed, or are they private
citizens? They're private citizens. Under the statute, the fire chief's brother can be a Civil Service Commissioner.
But they are chosen by elected officials.
They're chosen by the city manager and approved by the city council. That's true. They're chosen. In other words, they're chosen by one party to the dispute.
They're chosen by a governmental entity.
That's correct.
They have some accountability to the electorate if they don't properly pick the civil service commissioners.
That's correct, Your Honor. They are chosen by that. But keep in mind that the persons they pick, there's almost a limitless, area within which they can choose. And the question would be, if the state cannot, in the Civil Service Act, assign the task of hearing disciplinary appeals to hearing examiners, why could they assign that task to, for example, a Civil Service Commission or a state board that they might set up?
Do you see a difference where the police chief picks his brother, or someone on the city council picks the chief's brother and puts them on the Civil Service Commission, and the public gets dissatisfied with the Civil Service Commission's ruling? They have some means of making the city council account for that, do they not, to the electorate?
They do, Your Honor, and also if they become dissatisfied with the civil service system in general, they can hold them accountable there too, because the citizenry can, by petition and election, rescind civil service in its entirety. It's a local option statute that the city has chosen to adopt. If they choose to rescind it, they can do that too.
If they did that, what protection do the firemen and policemen have without a civil service system?
They would have none.
If the city opted out?
They would have none, Your Honor. They would have only whatever protection the city chose to afford.
So
they'd be employed at will just like any other.
So whatever the city manager or the police chief decided to discipline would be, there would be no recourse from that?
There would be no recourse from that unless I suppose there was some sort of constitutional question.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel. That concludes the arguments and two causes we've heard this morning, and they'll be submitted on briefs and oral arguments. The marshal will adjourn the court.
All rise. Oyez, oyez, oyez. Honorable Supreme Court of Texas.